Welcome to the Goal Lines Podcast, your Mid-Missouri football guide. If you don't already subscribe, find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's installment of the News Tribune Football Podcast featuring the Missouri Tigers. I'm your host, Tony Hawley. I'm sitting here with Colin O'Brien of the News Tribune. And, Colin, the final score looked pretty decent. There's kind of a garbage time cover there in the thing. But, 38-19 against Alabama, if I had told you that going into the week, that was going to be the final score, I think a lot of Mizzou fans would have been pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, pleased with it. Maybe not necessarily how it started, but sure, at least with how it ended.
Yeah.
Alabama didn't really have to try a whole lot on offense after their fourth drive. They went up 21-0 pretty quick, and then halftime 28-3, and then Mizzou's not the Patriots and Alabama's not the Falcons, so that was all she wrote.
I was going to say, I didn't tune in for the first half because I kind of knew how the first half was going. I did tune in the second half because I was kind of curious to see how it might go with, you know, Missouri's first stringers against Alabama's second stringers, and just to kind of see, okay, where are we at in that point? And I think there was some... So, you know, take what you will from it, but there were some things where you look at it and go, okay, you know what, there were some things that I looked at and went, okay, that they're getting a few things done here, which, again, it's so hard to just tell after an odd preseason what to make of any of this. So
and we'll starting just, against the number two team in the
exactly,
country. Yeah.
You just go, I don't know what we take away from this other than the fact that, okay, we got a game in. So, but I think the one thing to me that I think was really the thing that probably jumped off the page the most was just the stats put up by Sean Robinson. So you can probably tell me a little bit more about how actually good or not good it was. But, I mean, 19 of 25 passing is something where you just go, okay, I don't care who you're playing against, whether it be Alabama's first stringers, Alabama's fourth stringers, completing that many passes is something you would like to see from your quarterback, even if they're all just dinks and dunks, at least you're completing all of them.
Right, and that 19 of 25 is, I think, 76%, which is a program record at Mizzou for completion percentage by a quarterback in their first start for the program.
Okay.
Robinson, of course, wasn't his first collegiate start. He had a year and some change under his belt, at least playing at TCU before
right.
he transferred. But it was an impressive debut. He took care of the ball very well, especially in the air. I wrote a story for Monday's News Tribune that kind of looked back. Drinkwitz gave a quote in his postgame presser where he said, you know, we started Robinson because of his previous experience at TCU, but also because we thought his legs gave us the best chance to run some of this read option stuff that we thought might work against Alabama. And it was interesting. I thought I went and watched the game back on Sunday, and those read option plays were some of Missouri's least effective against Alabama.
Okay.
Alabama had them snuffed out almost immediately. I'm not sure Missouri had a positive gain on any of them. They only ran it a handful of times Robinson actually kept the ball and then tried to, you know, get the two-on-one out of the edge. But one of the plays was a fumble as well. So it wasn't crisp, or at least Alabama had it very well covered and snuffed it out. But I was very pleasantly surprised by his arm and what he was able to do in the pass game. 185 yards, 54 of those came on a wheel route that Alabama just completely busted a coverage on with Tyler Beatty. But he did everything you could have asked him for, and I think a little more, actually, because three of those incompletions were drops by Missouri receivers.
And the other thing, too, that also stands out to you is the interception column where you look at there, and there's a zero there. So, again, what you want from your quarterback, whether it be a conservative game plan or not very super aggressive, is the fact that you just go, okay, let's not give them the ball. And so as long as we can control what we're doing on offense, then we're ahead of the game at that point. So that's great from that standpoint. The other thing is you get a little bit of time for Connor Bazelak, which, you know, we knew going in that we're going to see both of them. His number's not necessarily as great, 7 of 14 passing for 68 yards, but also, again, no interceptions from that standpoint. And, I think it's one of those things where you go, okay, you got both of them time. Maybe we kind of now go know going forward which one we're going to see a little bit more of. But I also don't think that the jury's completely out where you just go, well, that shuts the door completely. But, you know, that's part of what the intriguing part of the early stages of every season is.
Right, and Eli was asked about that this week and said specifically he doesn't think it's ever going to be the case that Missouri doesn't play two quarterbacks this year at some point, some form or fashion, just because COVID makes things so uncertain and you never actually know until game day,
sure,
really, who's going to be actually able to suit up for you in some
right.
cases. But Bazelak did well for himself, yes, I agree, and did enough that I think he will also get some more time going forward. I think it's no surprise that Robinson took the first snap of the game at quarterback and is going to stay the ostensible starting quarterback, even if they're listed as or on the depth chart. But Bazelak, the first drive he got to start the second quarter, you could kind of see Drinkwitz after he came off the field. It was a three and out, and Bazelak kind of rolled out on third down and probably could have both run for the sticks, and he also had Kiki Chisholm kind of hanging out over the middle as an outlet, but he tried a throw to Damon Hazleton past the sticks that was pretty close to being completed, but was also a good coverage by Alabama defender and just was incomplete. So you could kind of see Eli talking to him on the sideline, and you could kind of read his lips to say,
right,
you got to tuck it and run right there.
Right.
But he closed out the last two drives, I think, of Missouri's offense of the game, maybe just the last one, and Missouri kind of ran a two-minute drill against not Alabama's entire second string. They had some of their first-string defenders out there,
right,
and Missouri marched down the field in that two-minute drill, and the clock expired as he ran in like a seven-yard touchdown run. So that's why Mizzou had 19, because they didn't kick the PAT. There was no point kicking
right.
PAT, so that's how they got to that odd number.
You know, it also bears mentioning that the fact that, yeah, Alabama's in control throughout, like you say. The game was kind of decided early on. But I also feel like those are the games, too, where things can get lopsided in a hurry. And we kind of talked about a little bit of this off air. But, you know, you look at the final box score, and there's nothing that jumps out at you, and you go, oh, my gosh, look at that lopsided number for one team versus the other. You know, it's not the sort of thing where you go, I mean, like, you know, first downs were 22-20. You know, it's total yards. You know, yes, you know, Alabama's got an edge by about 100, but it's not like they put up 500 and you only put up, you know, 180 or something. None of the numbers were so glaring that you look at it and just go, that was a complete manhandling, which I think some people, listening to people talk, you know, out in society, there were a lot of people who were just like, man, Missouri's going to get drilled this week. And did they get beat? Sure, absolutely. But did they get manhandled? No, it was never to the point where you just go, this is David and Goliath, you know, and Goliath rightly won this time. This was something where you just go, okay, yeah, the better team won, but it wasn't like it was completely ugly, and it's not like there's nothing that you can hang your hat on if you're Missouri going forward and go, hey, we did a couple good things, you know, let's build on them.
Right, and Ryan Walters spoke to that specifically in his press conference on Wednesday. He said, you know, he didn't want to overreact to anything because that's a really good Alabama team they played.
Sure.
Two really good wide receivers. But he also liked a lot of things Missouri did coverage-wise. They asked their guys to play a lot of man, mm-hmm, and did pretty well, including true freshman Ennis Rakestraw, who kind of famously picked Missouri over Alabama and Texas on the second signing day in February, and started as a true freshman and played pretty well, all things considered. But yeah, I went back and looked as well, and in Alabama's first four drives, which the first one they had was a three and out, so this is including that, they ran 27 plays for 229 yards and 21 points.
Okay.
So 8.5 yards per play, basically.
Yeah, right.
That's not going to hold up anywhere, anytime.
Right.
But the entire rest of the game, they went 191 yards in 41 plays and scored 17 points, 4.6 yards per play. That's far better. And yeah, I think that's exactly what Walters was talking about, was that Missouri came out, took them a little while to get into the flow of things. Maybe they were a little high-strung after that three and out.
Sure.
They came out, one of the safeties, I can't remember which one it was, but delivered a big hit on Alabama receiver Devonta Smith. I think it might have been Josh Bledsoe or Tyree Gillespie, but to break up a throw to the chains that would have, you know, not been a three and out for Alabama in the first drive, and they were super psyched about that, but then Alabama came back out and pretty quickly put them in their place. So once they got that first quarter and change out of the way, it was much better.
And it didn't ever appear to me, again, I didn't watch the first half, only I watched the highlights later on, but watching the second half, it didn't appear to me to be an Alabama team that looked like it had taken its foot completely off the gas either. Where sometimes you see that where you just go, okay, yeah, Missouri played better later on because they weren't trying. I think Alabama was still trying, and I think it was just a matter of, yeah, they just played better after those initial kind of hiccups, and it's just like, you know, you kind of expect that sometimes. I mean, again, it's the first game of the season. There's going to be hiccups where you just go, okay, you're not going to be operating on all cylinders right from the get-go, so you expect a little bit about that. One of the other things that I think stood out to me, just looking kind of inside the numbers, was the penalties for Missouri were few and far between, which is, you know, as a coach, I'm sure that was one thing that Coach Drinkwitz was quick to point out, I'm sure, to the guys this week, is that's where we want to be.
Yeah, and one of them was kind of a fluke, and like you're probably not going to see it again this year for Missouri, in that Sean Robinson had a pass batted back to him and then tried to throw it again, which is a no-no.
Right.
But other than that, I think they had one false start and one hold,
yeah,
and that was it. Like,
yeah.
Defense played clean. There was nothing silly on special teams. Alabama gave Missouri great field position with the special teams. After a good return by Tyler Beatty, there was a late hit out of bounds, I think, in the second or third quarter. So, yeah, Missouri played very clean in that respect for sure.
Things get a little bit easier this week. You go from the second-ranked team to the 21st-ranked team. You know, it's I don't want to say it's easier, but Tennessee presents some different challenges that I think that Alabama does. But again, it's all SEC games this year, so you are in the midst of it. So it's not like you're going to get any weekends off. So you expect every game to be tough. But you know, Tennessee is coming off a win that could have been a loss, where you look at it and go 31-27 against South Carolina. That's a game where you just go, man, that decision's in doubt until the late stages. So you go, okay, is that, again, first week of the season, you're just not sure what you're going to get, and do they get things rolling this week, or is this maybe an indication that, you know what, maybe Tennessee is right for the picking this week. I won't say that I'm expecting a Missouri win, but I also think that, you know what, this is something where you just go, okay, this is going to be, a little more intriguing matchup this week than last week was for me.
Yeah, I tend to agree a little bit, just because I think this is kind of what you were saying, but it's just a little bit of a better measuring stick for Missouri in terms of equality of competition,
sure,
equality of talent on the roster. I think it'll be interesting to see how Missouri can defend Tennessee's offense. They don't have the same receivers that they did a year ago, but they still have Jarrett Garantano at quarterback. And last year in Columbia, he passed all over them late November, second to last game of the season. But some of that was the fact that Missouri had both its starting corners go down within the first, I think, 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Acy hurt before the game, and then Jarvis Ware hurt in the first drive. Ware got hurt again against Alabama, a knee injury, but MRI on Sunday, the day after the game, and Drinkwitz didn't sound like it was anything severe or long-lasting potentially, and said he was hopeful day-to-day for the game Saturday.
Yeah.
So we'll see there, but as long as Missouri doesn't have, you know, any COVID-related illnesses or any big injuries on defense at the start of the game that they weren't preparing for, because that was a huge issue for them in that game against Tennessee last year, and Tennessee had three different receivers catch 100 yards of receiving. So that's something that I don't think you're going to see again this year, but it'll be interesting to see how far off of that Tennessee's offense is.
Right. You know, we didn't touch on it, but that was a kind of a storyline going into last week, was Missouri and COVID, not sure what the personnel was going to be like or how many were going to be affected, or, you know, the numbers kept fluctuating. How are things on that front this week in terms of, you know, things being maybe a little more stabilized? We haven't heard much about it this week, so I'm assuming that is good news from the standpoint of, if you're not hearing constant updates about it, then maybe it's a thing we don't have to maybe necessarily worry about this week.
As far as we can tell, yeah, things are good on that front. Charlie Harbison, who's one of the defensive backs coaches on the staff, came over from App State with Drinkwitz, did not coach. He was supposed to be in the booth for the game against Alabama, but didn't coach because it came out, I think, a couple hours before kickoff that he had a COVID-related absence.
Okay.
However you want to call that. So Mizzou had to sub in a defensive quality control analyst to coach in his position from the booth, but it didn't look like there were any major contributors on the sideline for Missouri that couldn't play or that weren't there.
Yeah.
I think they had pretty much everybody that was a major contributor play, which I guess is kind of interesting. Then I don't know who was sick, really, because it wasn't any of the big names. So,
right.
But
if you're going to do it, get the third stringer sick if you can do it at any cost. If you're going to pick and choose, that's the way to go.
But Harbison will not be coaching Tennessee this week either, just because it's a mandated 14-day period of sitting out. And then Mizzou also had another opt out. Drinkwitz said Tuesday, linebacker Aubrey Miller, who played some on special teams against Alabama, but then end of last week, beginning of this week, decided to opt out of the season. So Mizzou has seven now, most of those, again, on the offensive end.
I may be putting you on the spot here because I didn't prep you for this, but you know, it's their quote unquote first road game of the season. I don't know what kind of a home field advantage Tennessee's going to have this year in the time of COVID. I don't know what their you know, fan policy is for games, but I gotta feel like this is one of those years where maybe playing road games is not going to be as you know, a daunting task as it is for some places. I mean, some schools are doing their best, and some schools are actually a little more loose with some of their restrictions. So I don't know what kind of hostile territory Missouri will be going into this week, but what do you kind of expect from, you know, having to play at Tennessee?
Well, I mean, the first thing is that I think Mizzou has won 3 of 5 games since joining the SEC at Neyland.
Okay.
So I know Tennessee hasn't won a home game against Missouri at Neyland since 2016. They only play every other year, so it's a one-game winning streak at this point, not even a streak. But and Tennessee hasn't been great in that span, so it's not like, even though they were selling out games, so it's not like it was maybe a huge deterrence for Missouri. The other part of that is that the less noise makes it easier. Like Ryan Walters was saying, he can talk to the players on the field pre-snap.
Yeah.
Like he could in the game against Alabama, and he probably will be able to as well at Tennessee, just because the noise is reduced in that capacity.
Right.
And the other side, or the, I guess on the offensive side for Missouri, it's probably going to mean that Sean Robinson and Connor Bazelak can get their calls or their checks in at the line of scrimmage before the play a lot easier, just because the crowd noise will be reduced. And
right.
I think maybe that was part of a little bit of it too with Mac Jones in Alabama in that first 15, 18 minutes of the game, was just that there was no crowd noise. He could communicate very clearly with his players and saw Missouri's defensive alignments and was able to pick him apart. So I think home field advantage is, I guess, not really a thing this year.
Yeah. I always wonder, too, how it gets affected by the fact that, you know, while at the same time it is easier for, you know, the offense to communicate maybe changes it wants to make, it's also sometimes easier for the defense to hear the offense making those changes. So sometimes you kind of wonder, is it a wash? Does it reward teams that are super-duper prepared, that know what their opponent's going to do? It just kind of, I think it's just an interesting chess game that kind of gets raised to an interesting level, because now you go, okay, yeah, you know, your guys were able to hear you calling out an audible, but they were also able to hear you calling out the audible. So it's just, I think it's kind of one of those unique things where, you know, as someone who used to cover Lincoln University on a regular basis in front of very paltry crowds, it's one of those things where a game where everybody can hear everything is always a little bit different from, you know, big game experiences where, you know, noise is a factor. So it's just, it's kind of, sometimes it's a different kind of sporting experience that you're not used to. So I don't know. I find it kind of interesting, because it's just like, you know, it's almost, the games that I've watched this year, I kind of like it when the announcers sometimes just are quiet, because it's a very unique experience where you can hear what's going on.
From that respect too, I'm kind of interested to see just what, with another week and then, you know, not having to necessarily worry about crowd noise, just what Missouri asks Bazelak and Robinson to do on offense.
Sure.
Because for Robinson especially, he was super accurate, but he wasn't necessarily throwing the ball that far downfield. His deep targets were pretty good. He was on passes of, you know, past the line of scrimmage, or past the first down marker, past the, like, 11 yards. I have him at 4 of 9 for 96 yards, but 54 of that was on that wheel route touchdown.
Okay.
And he had another 9 attempts that were behind the line of scrimmage. So 18, or not, I guess 9 of 25 inside, underneath the line of scrimmage, 9 of 25 past the first down marker. But his average depth of target wasn't that deep. So I'll be interested to see. I mean, a lot of what Missouri wants to do with this offense is get those swing passes, get those screens or whatever else out to Tyler Beatty, out to Jalen Knox, out to Damon Hazelton, out to Dom Jacinto, and get the guy with the ball in their hand quickly, let them do what they want to do against the defense, and not necessarily have to run 5-10 yards downfield before they hit them. So I don't necessarily know that the depth of target is going to change for Robinson this year, just because if he's going to be that accurate, and if Missouri doesn't want to risk interceptions that badly and has the skill guys that it needs, can get them the ball underneath and have them make guys miss tackles. I mean, Knox and Jacinto and I think Hazelton especially did a really good job of making guys miss against Alabama.
Yeah.
Against Alabama.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
We'll have to see. I'm interested to see what Missouri asks him to do. Also curious to see if they ask him to try to run more of that read option, or if, because I couldn't quite tell from the way Drinkwitz answered the question if that read option stuff was for Alabama specifically,
sure,
and just didn't work, or right, if it was in general a key play for this offense. So we'll have to see. But I do think that Missouri is going to keep swinging those passes kind of short, not necessarily screens, but just, you know, get guys in motion as the snap goes, and then have them just swinging out into space and hitting them kind of in the numbers.
We've touched on a couple of things that are football in the time of COVID, but I would be remiss as a former sports writer talking to another sports writer about, so how was the post-game interviews in the time of COVID, and how unique was that, and how effective was that this year in your first post-game experience in COVID-19?
Yeah, it was a little, the players especially, it was a little rough just because, the period we have in normal times after the game is probably about 15, 20 minutes, but players kind of cycle in, but they also stick around as long as someone's talking to them. So you can kind of buffet style, I guess, choose who you want to talk to in what order, and then you can kind of inform the questions you're going to ask somebody else based on another answer a guy gave you to start with, and then maybe even go back to that guy if the person you just finished talking to said something in response that you want to get their take on.
Right.
There's not really any of that. It was, you know, here's this person, and we have six lined up for you, and we're going to go in this order down the line and get all of them. But, I can't really complain. It's just something else that we have to deal with.
I was going to say, the logistics of it are always kind of a – I don't know. It's kind of a nightmare to begin with sometimes with access, and I can only imagine when it's so regimented, it's only going to get even more interesting. I guess we've gone on for quite a while already, so we might as well get to the prediction point of the podcast. But how do you see this one playing out Saturday?
I also don't think we said it last week, so I'll say it here. 11 a.m. kick on SEC Network.
There you go.
also, my prediction last week, I realized I listened back to this podcast, and I misspoke. So in the Drinkwitz ideal of everyone needing to get better for this week's game, I need to get better too. I didn't keep my mouth a consistent distance from the mic, so my volume was going up and down, and I said I think 41-7 instead of 41-17, which is what I meant to say. So I was closer than I actually spoke last week's podcast. But this week I'm going to say, you know, it wouldn't be a huge surprise to me if Missouri won this game, but I think they're going to have to show me they can do it before I pick them to do it.
Okay.
At least against the likes of Tennessee. But I think it's going to be something like 28-20 Tennessee.
All right. That should do it for this week. For Colin O'Brien, I'm Tony Hawley, saying thanks for listening.
For more information about this week's games, pick up a copy of the Goal Line section in Friday's News Tribune, and get game updates and more prep sports content all week by following NT Sports on Twitter. Thanks for listening.